Good morning, everyone. It is around 4 a.m. on the morning of June 3rd, 2013. I hope everything is going well in your part of the world, although I realize that a lot of the world is in upheaval these days in all kinds of ways. Economic situations are difficult in many parts of the world. The weather situations are difficult in many parts of the world. So I hope that things are well enough wherever you are. The last month has been very quiet on the website. I've had only one person write in this month with a question, and that question doesn't even have anything to do with non-duality, but it was sent in the spirit of fun, and I will respond to it. However, since there has been only this one question sent in, it means that this month's response will be a bit of a ramble on a rambling commentary on non-duality. And I'm not even so certain what more I can offer in this area. But I remember there was, in the last couple of years, there was one other instance where only a few questions were sent in, and I had wondered out loud in the response whether or not I had perhaps answered all of the questions that people had, and that people were maybe tired of listening to my particular commentary. And at that time, I had a lot of response after mentioning these things, that a lot of people wrote in and said, please, please, even if nobody sends in any questions, please make some comment on non-duality. So, working on the assumption that there are still a number of people who are tuning in to the website for this monthly response, I will offer something. I just don't have a clue right now as to what might be coming up. But let's respond to this question that was sent in first. Someone wrote in saying, "Hi Daryl, thanks for your monthly posts, which always point to the truth of what's really going on here, and leave nothing to cling to except the mystery of this moment, which is saying too much already. I have a question, but not really related to the non-dual perspective. In the UK, we have a long-running BBC Radio 4 series called Desert Island Discs. A weekly well-known guest is invited onto the show and brings with them a selection of songs. It offers a bit of insight into the personalities invited to appear. The final section of the show asks the person to select one song, one book, and one luxury item to take with them to a desert island, assuming that the basic needs for survival are already met. My question is, which song or piece of music, which book, and which luxury item would you take with you to your desert island? Many thanks again, and looking forward to meeting you in London later this year. Kind regards." So, this is an interesting question. Even though it was sent in the spirit of fun, it has it's an interesting task to try to narrow down what it is you would take with you to a desert island, to pin something down to one item in some certain area. So, As far as music goes, we live in an advanced age with an advanced technology. So I mean, a lot of things have come and gone since I received this question, even without consciously putting any focus on it. Somehow the mind in the background to my daily activities has been mulling over a lot of this. And it just seemed I wouldn't have to be limited to one piece of music, since we live at a time when I could easily put together some kind of compilation of music on a CD to take with me. So even though this is subject to change from time to time, at this moment I think if I was to take some music with me, it would probably be an assortment of pieces from a number of different albums, and probably some stuff from a couple of albums by Miles Davis, one of the albums being Blue Moods and the other being Quiet Nights. I think I would probably mix that up with some pieces by Keith Jarrett. He had a couple of albums that I enjoyed. One's titled Jasmine, and the other, I think, is titled Melody at Midnight with You. I think it's something like that. And I would probably throw in some pieces from Paul Desmond from an album that he had titled Take 10. As far as a book goes, I don't read a lot of fiction these days, but one book that pops to mind is The Unbearable Lightness of Being by Milan Kundera. When I was reading a lot of fiction, I really enjoyed Kundera's observations of humankind. And this book in particular, I enjoyed very much. It's an examination of what we experience in life, and ultimately a particular person discovering what it is that's really sustaining in life without being preachy. I mean, it has a very worldly quality to it. And his writing style is just very beautiful, I find. As far as a luxury item, I've never really had much opportunity to live in luxury, or to even think in those terms. Probably the most luxurious thing that I can think of is to have a lot of free time to simply dabble in various interests that I have. And I'm assuming that if I'm being sent to a desert island, I'll probably have quite a bit of free time to simply engage in whatever interest is coming up in the moment, whether it be to sit quietly or to create something, or just get really into some kind of physical activity. So I think that's all the luxury I would really need. I don't think I'd need to take anything. And that's all that's really coming up in relation to that question. So now we have a whole lot of free time. And I don't really know what more I can add to what it is I've already offered on this website. So it's probably going to be kind of disparate points, whatever comes to mind over the next short period of time. I had somebody the other day ask me how they could go deeper into a non-dual perspective. They found themselves relating to this perspective quite strongly, and now they're very urgently wanting to move deeper into it. So this is somebody who already acknowledges that all of life is an unexplainable event simply presenting itself, and that we don't ultimately exist as anything apart from the presentation. And often people get the impression that they're supposed to be thinking that all the time. They make some assumption about what this realization or what this perspective is supposed to give rise to. They feel there's some particular result that they're supposed to get to. And it isn't the case that it leads to any particular result. Really, once there's that very simple acknowledgement that the event of this moment is a happening that can't be described in any way whatsoever, because it has no particular form, and the words that we have are just meaningless sounds pointing to apparent forms. And when we consider life, we know that all the various forms, all the various things in life are actually changing. And we may come to realize that ultimately it's an unformed happening, and that this happening of this moment is simply presenting itself. Now, if we rest and make no effort to do anything at all, the moment still presents itself. The process that we are still presents itself. Ultimately, we have no way of saying what any of it is. We don't have any way of saying what we are. All of it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own. That's really all there is to realize. At that point, the question of how do I move deeper into this understanding becomes irrelevant, because there is no you apart from the event presenting itself. You're not in charge of it. So however you're going to apparently behave in life is not your choice. It's not your doing. So your particular urges in life simply arise as an expression of this larger mysterious event. If you're truly drawn to this non-dual perspective, or truly expressed with this non-dual perspective, then it will move apparently deeper on its own. It's not really that it's going to move any deeper, because there's nothing to move more deeply into. It's just that the acknowledgement of this larger mysterious event of the moment makes itself more obvious. The acknowledgement increases to some degree, but there's no way of saying to what degree that's going to express itself. And actually, it doesn't really matter, because the moment there is actually this shift in the sense of life, this shift, the moment there is this, what we might call this realization, it's not actually a realization, it's just that at a certain point it may become very obvious that there is only this unexplainable happening of the moment. Like in this moment, even if all the thoughts fall away, the happening, there seems to be something happening in the moment. And that happening simply makes itself obvious. And it may also be obvious that there actually isn't any explanation for this happening. And it may also become obvious that this happening is happening entirely on its own. And that everything that we assume that we are is also just this unexplainable happening. Happening spontaneously, automatically. One could say that it's simply the presentation of some larger mysterious happening. If it becomes so obvious that any time you actually seem to consider the basic fact of life, that is the basic fact that makes itself obvious any time you do consider it, then that's it. That's the awakening. That's the realization. It's not that you're going to end up having a particular state of mind after that, or it's not that it's going to give a particular result in every case. It's just that there's an acknowledgement that here's this totally mysterious happening that we might call the river of life or the unformed ocean of existence, and it's just going to present itself in whatever way it presents itself. It's not that you're going to do some particular practice that's going to create some kind of magical transformation. The supposed awakening, the so-called realization, and please keep in mind that these are just storylines too. What actually occurs with this so-called realization is that it just becomes obvious. One of the things that occurs is that it simply becomes obvious that there is no explanation at all for what is happening in this moment or any moment. And so all stories of realization, all stories of awakening, that those become obviously a fantasy as well. But what occurs with this so-called awakening, with this so-called realization, is simply that it becomes obvious. Certain facts about existence become obvious. And it's simply that for certain apparent people, in a very simple consideration of their actual experience, they come to realize that their actual experience, all of it, is pointing to the fact that everything in life is a formless dance. Again, you know, we walk around complaining about everything changing. The weather's changing, the economy's changing, my relationship is changing, my health is changing. And we complain about all of that without realizing that we're complaining about the great unformed ocean of existence, magically presenting itself in an ever-shifting array of appearances. So the actual acknowledgement of this is not the result of some precise practice. I mean, it's very simply this. I mean, in a way, you could say if I told you there was a white house down at the end of a certain street, you don't have to do any particular practice in order to agree with me. All you have to do is walk down to the end of the street and have a look. Is there a white house there or isn't there? And it's the same with this non-dual acknowledgement. You know, if I say to you that all of existence, everything in your experience indicates that everything you know of is changing, and it's changing all on its own, then ultimately your experience is pointing out that life is a formless event, an unformed dance of some kind. If I ask you to consider that our explanations ultimately mean nothing because, you know, our society simply trains us to bark certain sounds when we point to certain forms, and those sounds would be entirely different sounds if we lived in a different culture and spoke a different language, then, you know, in that consideration, we could come to realize that basically they could be any sound, and the sound itself has no particular meaning, and that they simply point to apparent forms that don't ultimately exist. So in that very simple consideration, if you're interested, there may be the acknowledgement that we don't have any tool for explaining life. Even within our storylines that aren't true, even within the storylines that we believe, the storyline tells us that we don't come out of the womb with any kind of storyline. So in fact, the whole notion of a baby coming out of the womb, the baby doesn't have that, the so-called baby doesn't have that storyline. It takes a lot of years for people to train the baby to bark on command, to bark these certain sounds, to ultimately bark this storyline. And then at some point, somehow there's a belief that this bizarre storyline is the truth. If I ask you to consider whether or not you've created your basic needs or your basic interests, or if you create your concerns, if you create your urges to do certain things, if you create your, you know, you may have a strong urge to do something and then you have some kind of counter urge that resists that. If I ask you if you create those urges, if you create your abilities or your lack of abilities, you may come to realize that we don't create those things. As I've pointed out many, many times, as Schopenhauer stated in the late 1800s, that yes, we can do what we want to do, but we don't get to create our wants. And so it is that in this very simple acknowledgement of what we would call our actual experience, in that very simple acknowledgement, it may become obvious that life is actually, from our experience, a totally formless dance moving and shifting on its own, and that we're part of the presentation. That there isn't any way of saying what any of this actually is, and none of it is somebody's personal doing, because any urge that we've had to apparently participate in a particular way, any urge we've had to move in an apparent direction, That hasn't been our creation. So these are just simply very simple considerations, and this is all really that is entailed in this non-dual acknowledgement and non-dual perspective. For some, this is within the world of forms, even though ultimately a non-dual perspective is pointing out that everything in existence is a formless happening that can't be explained in any way at all. Even if there is an acknowledgement of that, it doesn't get rid of the world of apparent form. We will always have this feeling that life has apparent form. If we look around, we see all kinds of apparent forms that we identify. And even though they're shifting in subtle ways, or not so subtle ways, in each moment, it still doesn't get rid of the world of apparent form, and we don't get rid of the storylines. At best, we simply stop believing the storylines. Even the storylines themselves, we may come to realize that we don't know what that is. It's not something called a storyline. We were just taught to bark the sound storyline as we point to these apparent thoughts flitting through an apparent mind. And actually, there is no way of saying what any of that is. It just is a totally mysterious, formless event presenting itself. So all of this is just a very simple consideration of what our life experience, our apparent life experience, actually is. And if somebody is interested in considering this, I mean, if you're the whole non-dual awakening, the apparent awakening, the apparent realization, simply arises in this simple consideration of what our actual experience is. Once there is an acknowledgement of this totally unexplainable happening simply presenting itself, and the realization or the impression that everything we are is simply an expression of that larger event, nothing more is required. From that point on, there is simply this totally mysterious event presenting itself. There isn't any, you can't go in the wrong direction. There isn't anything to judge as being superior or inadequate. It's all simply a totally unexplainable happening presenting itself. There isn't anything to be concerned about as far as what apparent direction it's going to move, because it's simply going to move in whatever way it moves. It may become obvious that just like a river flows and the way it flows, or the wind blows in whatever way it blows, it's all moving to its own nature. A river doesn't have to be concerned about how it's going to flow, it just flows. And the wind doesn't have to be concerned about what direction it's going to blow, because the whole thing is an expression of something that can't be grasped mentally or physically. It's simply an event expressing itself to its own nature. In certain Zen traditions, they will point out that the hidden order is much more important than the obvious order, or the hidden harmony is much more obvious are much more important than the obvious harmony. And what they're pointing out is that existence has its own order, it has its own harmony. It's just not our idea of what harmony is. It's just not what we would want it to be. We want it to be only golden glowing moments without the negative what we would consider to be the negative aspects, the confusion, the anxiety, the doubt, those dark moments. We want them to be only golden glowing moments with certainty and clarity and joy. And that's our idea of harmony. That's our idea of how life should be ordered. But as these Zen traditions or Taoist traditions might point out, that life already has an intrinsic order, an intrinsic harmony, and that includes the dark moments, the flowing of life, the harmonious movement or dance of this larger mysterious event includes those apparent moments of darkness and confusion, anxiety, despair. And everything is moving to this intrinsic nature or intrinsic current of existence. It's never been our personal doing, so that our personal doing is an expression of this, what you might call a hidden order or a hidden harmony, the basic nature of existence, the basic nature of this larger, unexplainable happening. So that our particular urges that arise, our particular needs that arise, our particular interests that arise, the things that motivate us, the things that compel us to move in a certain direction, the urges to move in a particular direction, and then the urge to maybe resist that movement for certain apparent reasons, those urges simply arise as an expression of this larger event. So these motivating factors in our life, those aren't our creation. And they simply, everything that we are simply plays out in relation to those motivating impulses that are an expression of this larger mysterious dance of existence. Now, even if we do acknowledge this greater mysterious dance of existence and acknowledge that all of it is moving to its intrinsic nature and that our apparent doing is not our doing ultimately, it's simply also an expression of this larger mysterious event, it doesn't mean that once there is that acknowledgement that all of it is going to move in some wonderful fashion and that there's never going to be any pain or apparent confusion or despair. It simply acknowledges that all of it is going to move in whatever way it moves. So within a Christian tradition, originally there was no prayer asking God for anything in particular. Prayer was more basically an acknowledgement that everything was God's expression. And in this situation, God is simply a word pointing to this totally unexplainable presence, this formless dance of this moment, this unformed happening that's simply moving and shifting on its own, simply expressing itself, this unexplainable, ungraspable happening of the moment. that's what the word God originally would be pointing to, would be simply acknowledging. And with that acknowledgement, there wasn't any prayer asking God for something. There was simply an acknowledgement that there is only the expression of this totally unexplainable, formless presence. And that's everything we see already. It's not like we have to go somewhere else to find it. It's everything we already apparently experience. And the so-called awakening or realization is just a very simple acknowledgement that this is all that's actually presenting itself in this moment. Everything is changing. There's no way of saying exactly what any of this is. And it's simply happening spontaneously. If we rest and make no effort to do anything at all, it doesn't stop happening. It goes on presenting itself in whatever way it presents itself. So at that point, you know, within a Christian tradition or within certain traditions that relate to what they might call the Great Spirit, there was simply the acknowledgement that everything is the expression of that. And that isn't something somewhere else that we're pointing to. It's this, everything that seems to be occurring in this moment. So that prayer was really a contemplation of the fact that that's all that is existing. And that we basically are going to have to live with whatever it presents. And we are going to have to be whatever it presents. So if you went off to some great non-dual teacher like Ramana Maharshi and you asked him, what am I supposed to do with life, in life? What should I be doing? His response would be what you are. Because again, this is simply an acknowledgement that in any particular moment, you're going to be expressed in whatever way this totally unexplainable happening is expressing itself. And that's not subject to our desire, because our desire isn't our desire. Any desires that we have, any urges that we have, any interests that we have, any concerns that we have, any abilities that we have, any lack of abilities that we seem to have, all of that is the expression of this unexplainable, unformed dance. There was a time when certain cultures would have certain ceremonies for the spring planting and for the autumn harvest. A lot of people in modern times, what we would call contemporary times, they have the impression that these primitive people were calling on their gods to give them a good harvest. But that's not actually what they were doing fundamentally. What they were fundamentally doing was once again acknowledging that the whole thing is the movement of something that's unexplainable. It's the dance of something that can't be grasped mentally or physically. So they were, in a way, emphasizing their acknowledgement of that basic fact of life and that they were going to have to live with whatever life presented. And that often it doesn't present in a very pleasant way. So in certain cultures, you would have these ceremonial rites of passage, and they were often quite brutal. You know, the young people at a certain age were tested in a certain way. They might go on an extreme fasting and then be sent out into the wilderness to take part in some kind of vision quest. Not only would they be isolated in a way that their own sense of existence would make itself more obvious, their own unique sense of existence would make itself more obvious. It also was a very brutal physical testing, because again, it's simply an acknowledgement that life expresses itself often in ways that are not very pleasant. So again, it's just a very simple acknowledgement of what life actually is. It's quite an interesting thing that often very sophisticated people will end up ridiculing a kind of Disneyland view of existence. There was a time when movies put out by the Disney Corporation always had this happy ending, and people that were quite sophisticated would often ridicule these kinds of movies, claiming that they were basically just some endless yearning for a fairy tale world. And yet those very same sophisticated individuals would participate in some kind of spiritual tradition and spiritual practices with this endless hope that somehow life was going to become, you know, if they did just the right practice, if they did just enough loving kindness practice, if they became awakened totally, that life would always be a golden, glowing, loving event, which is basically the same fairy tale that the Disney Corporation was trying to to offer to the children of the world. So, for some apparent people, this non-dual sensibility arises with this simple consideration of what our actual experience is. And once there is an acknowledgement of this totally mysterious happening, simply happening in whatever way it's happening in any apparent moment, there's no way to move deeper into that. There's nothing deeper to acknowledge. However, it may appear to be the case that we simply acknowledge it more often, or it becomes even more obvious from moment to moment. If we are expressed as apparently having a non-dual perspective, if we apparently relate to this perspective more than any other, we may find ourselves drawn to contemplating our basic experience of life. We may be drawn to contemplating these apparent facts of life more often. So, you know, I've laid out on this website any number of ways to contemplate these things, looking at our own experience. There's an invitation to simply acknowledge the happening of the moment. And that's simply sitting down and making no effort to do anything at all. And it's a simple acknowledgement that the whole thing goes on presenting itself, the process that we are, the process that we call existence, simply goes on presenting itself in its own way, at its own pace. In my books, I've simply invited people to consider what their storyline is. And basically everything that's in the book, you know, what the books that I've written, all of that's here on the website as well. Although each time it seems to be expressed in a slightly different fashion. And sometimes it makes itself more apparent in reading something rather than listening to something. Sometimes it seems more apparent when you listen to some point as opposed to reading some point. But again, if there is this simple acknowledgement that there's just this happening of the moment, you know, another consideration would be that whatever thoughts we have of the past or future, it's quite obvious that that's what we would call a thought that's occurring in this moment. Somehow the happening of this moment has more, I don't know, substance to it than these thoughts about a past or thoughts about a future. And if we consider this, we might come to acknowledge that our life is fundamentally always what we would call the happening of this moment. The whole notion of time is an illusion. You know, we often have the sense that things are changing and they're moving and shifting in correlation with something that we would call time, that there's this time element that somehow runs parallel to all of these changes. But the fact of the matter is that there is no timeline running parallel to these changes. The change is giving the illusion of time moving. You know, the focus on these apparent forms and the focus on these apparent forms changing, we simply start to mark the appearance of an apparent form, and then we mark the change in that appearance, and we call that the movement of time. But all of this is illusion, because the whole notion of a form existing there in the first place is an illusion. There isn't anything that continues. There's a happening that has no particular form. But when we get into these storylines about change occurring in form, we start to mark this as the passage of time. And then we start to get interested in convoluted notions of an instant, of a moment, a presence, a present moment that exists that's beyond all consideration, because the moment you even start to consider it, you've already moved away from the present moment. And all of this is just total fantasy, kind of tying itself in a knot. There isn't any actual time. There's an unformed happening. We don't experience something called time. We make up a notion of time in relation, you know, what we experience is change, apparent change. But if there's an acknowledgement that there is only change, it also may become an acknowledgement that there can't be any change, because constant change is simply the constant absence of form. And the constant absence of form can't be anything changing. It's just the appearance of change. Once again, these simple considerations, they point out just the ridiculous notions of this world of thought, these ridiculous storylines. It simply points out the limitation of storyline. It doesn't really let us come to some storyline that's ultimately the reality. Again, these words that we have, they're just meaningless sound pointing to apparent forms. And if the focus goes on this dance of apparent thought and apparent form, it's simply an engagement with a world of fantasy. And again, acknowledging that basic fact doesn't make the storylines go away. The storylines still present themselves, but it's an acknowledgement that there's no way of saying what that storyline actually is. It's not something called a storyline. Again, it's just a totally unexplainable happening, moving and shifting and dancing on its own, presenting itself in its own way, in its own time. Now, there are a lot of people, a lot of apparent people who, when they first start to consider these basic facts and these facts start making themselves obvious, there's an immediate concern over not being in charge of this whole event. Somehow the feeling that we're not in charge of it gives the impression that somehow the whole event is some kind of hopeless situation. We get the impression that if we're not in charge, the whole thing is going to spiral downward in some unpleasant fashion, and that our life is going to be grim and it's going to be a total disaster. And this concern arises because there's some remaining storyline about us being in control. In fact, the storylines that, you know, when people say things like, you're not in control, from this non-dual perspective, they start this debate about whether or not it's free will or destiny. And this is still being very much caught up within storylines and wanting to describe life in some way. What this non-dual consideration is really presenting is the fact that you can't assess life through a storyline. There isn't any storyline that can assess life in any kind of accurate way. The storylines are simply an expression of this totally unexplainable movement or dance, this unformed occurrence. So that the whole debate about free will or destiny, this is still being totally absorbed in fantasy. A non-dual perspective is simply stating that none of these storylines apply to what is happening here. So you can't say it's a matter of free will, and you can't say it's a matter of destiny. The storylines don't apply. So you have someone like the Buddha ultimately declaring that descriptions don't apply to any of this. Not legitimately, not in any truthful way. They are simply the fantasies of form. Those storylines are based on the fantasies of form, the apparent forms that we see. But each one of us, if we live our life for any amount of apparent time, we end up with the feeling that everything is changing. There is no fundamental form to any of this. It's moving and shifting in ways that are often a delight. We get surprises that present themselves unexpectedly, and we get terrible things that present themselves unexpectedly. So that ultimately this dance, it's not some kind of hopeless situation. It's some kind of strange and wondrous occurrence that will express both wonderful, joyful moments, golden, glowing relationships, moments in relationship, moments of clarity, moments of confidence, moments of ecstasy, along with moments of darkness, moments of anxiety, moments of doubt, moments of confusion, moments of despair. So there is this it's very difficult to really, I mean, you can't really say what it is. I think it was John Masefield, the poet, who had some piece of poetry in which he declared that he had these lines that stated, "Out of the earth to rest or range, the unknown passing through the strange." Someone handed me a poem by Tennyson the other day. I'd never run across it before. And in this poem, actually I have it right here. In this poem, Tennyson points out that the world was never made. It will change, but it will not fade. So let the wind range, for evening and morn ever will be through eternity. Nothing was born, nothing will die, all things will change. Again, a very simple acknowledgement of this totally formless dance of existence, simply dancing on its own, and that everything is an expression of this unknown passing through the strange. Someone recently was lamenting the fact that they somehow haven't become more perfected in their life than they are. This is someone who's drawn very strongly to spiritual practices, to monitoring every thought and doing practices of loving kindness and generosity in the hope of becoming clearer and kinder. And he was lamenting the other day that he should be more advanced at this point. Now, this is also someone who, if he's encouraged to sit down and really acknowledge what his actual experience of life is, he will ultimately acknowledge that it's a totally mysterious happening expressing itself and that he's not in control. However, the natural expression of this larger mysterious event expresses this apparent person in a way that he does enjoy spiritual practice. He does enjoy that kind of exploration. However, if you are someone who apparently is drawn to spiritual practices, formal practices like meditation and loving kindness practices and concentration practices in order to become clearer and kinder, it's probably important to keep, if you also are drawn to acknowledging this larger mysterious dance of existence, it's probably important to keep in mind or to consider every now and then that these practices never really are a situation of developing control over what you are. It's not a situation where if you do these practices, you're somehow ultimately going to be in charge of what your capacity is in any of these areas. So these practices are actually explorations, and they remain explorations of what, we come to discover what capacities life offers to us and what it doesn't offer to us. So we ultimately discover what life will apparently allow us to do and what it won't apparently allow us to do. Again, even though ultimately all of this is a totally unformed, unexplainable happening, it doesn't get rid of the world of apparent form, and it doesn't get rid of the apparent storylines. Those continue to present themselves as an expression of this totally unformed, unexplainable happening. And within those apparent storylines, within that world of apparent form, there is this feeling that somehow we're on a life journey. And there is a storyline about a life journey. Within that storyline, you know, these practices, these spiritual practices, they remain an exploration of life. It's not a situation of if I practice something a certain amount of times, I'll have total control over it. You know, there are certain people who play basketball really well. They become professional basketball players. And the fact is that even if all of us learned to play basketball, we wouldn't, within this apparent world of form, within the world of stories, we would not all play basketball to the same skill level. And so it is that within this world of apparent form and story, things like clarity and kindness, these are capacities, these are talents that we don't have any ultimate say over. So even if all of us do loving kindness practices, some of us will very naturally have a skill with kindness, an inclination to kindness that others of us are not going to have. The same with certain clarities. You know, certain people have what seems to be an incredible clarity within certain fields. And so it is that within this apparent world of non-duality, it seems as though certain individuals express a certain clarity that others do not. So this non-dual consideration is not about leading all of humankind to some standard, some particular standard. And if one is inclined to explore life through spiritual practices, and you also acknowledge that all of this is a totally mysterious, unexplainable, unformed happening presenting itself, then in relation to these apparent spiritual practices, it's probably good once in a while to consider that these remain only explorations. It's simply an exploration of what life ultimately is going to allow us to do and what it isn't going to allow us to do. And that there isn't any particular standard to meet. The standard is already met. You know, people are looking around for the ultimate truth of life. They're looking around for the ultimate capacity of humankind. It already exists, because everything is already the expression of some totally unexplainable happening or presence or event. It never has been. Human beings moving existence. What we would call humankind is simply a small portion of the expression of this larger mysterious happening. So there's no standard that we have to meet. There's just however we're expressed. Again, if you went off to someone like Ramana Maharshi and you asked him, what am I supposed to do? He would say, be what you are, which, you know, is a, in some ways it's a totally ridiculous thing to say because it's a prescription, be what you are, but you can't be anything else. All of it is, it's already set up. It can only happen in the appropriate way. Whatever happens is the appropriate expression of this larger, mysterious, unexplainable happening. So life just as it is, our ordinary everyday life, this is already the appropriate expression of existence. However we're expressed in any apparent moment, that is the appropriate expression that we are. Because ultimately it's the dance of this unexplainable happening. Our loves, our interests, our needs, our concerns, our urges, our abilities, our lack of abilities, none of that is our personal creation. It's simply the expression of this unexplainable happening. Happening spontaneously. Even this so-called awakening isn't something that we create. There's no way to get every apparent person to have a non-dual perspective. The only apparent people that have a non-dual perspective are the people that nature expresses in this way. Anyone who has apparently had this non-dual realization, along with that realization is the realization that they didn't do it. They didn't decide in the womb that they were at a certain point going to have a non-dual sensibility. It's simply the way this larger unexplainable happening has expressed them. Because they are also a portion of this larger unexplainable happening. And at that point, there isn't any standard to meet. There's just however we're expressed in the dance of this larger event. It's not even that all of humankind is supposed to have a non-dual sensibility, because a non-dual sensibility isn't the one correct view of existence. A non-dual sensibility, an apparent awakening or realization to a non-dual sensibility, is again just a totally mysterious happening. It's one of the mysterious expressions, one of the apparent appearances of a totally formless event expressing itself. And so is every other apparent human being. It's not a matter of certain portions of humankind being spiritually ignorant and other portions of humankind being spiritually enlightened. All of it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening the way it happens. But even with that acknowledgement, it doesn't get rid of the storylines, the apparent storylines. It doesn't get rid of the apparent forms. And so the apparent forms and the storylines present themselves. And within that realm, this non-dual acknowledgement also becomes an acknowledgement of our own unique adventure. Within that world of apparent form, it can also be acknowledged that No two forms are identical. No two snowflakes are the same. No two trees are identical. No two anything are identical. And with that simple acknowledgement, the whole notion that there is some general standard for all human beings to meet becomes a very ridiculous notion. We can't ask every snowflake to be identical to every other snowflake. In fact, the natural expression of this larger mysterious event within this apparent world of form is that each and every snowflake is different from each and every other snowflake. It's unique. And so it is with apparent human beings. Each of us is unique. Each of us is a unique blend of needs and interests and concerns and urges to resist certain urges, and abilities and apparent lack of abilities. Each of us is a unique arrangement, and each within that apparent arrangement, within this world of apparent forms, it has its own organic harmony. There are certain things that each of us find meaningful. Certain unique things that each of us find meaningful. Certain unique things that each of us enjoy. And so it's not a matter of trying to meet some group standard in order to be fulfilled. It's more a matter that our fulfillment is the expression of this unique arrangement. And for each of us, within the world of apparent form, within this fantasy world of form, we're going to have our own unique adventure. We may be similar to other apparent people, but we can never be identical to any other apparent person. And so it is that our apparent life journey will have its own urges to explore certain things. There will be particular unique concerns. There will be automatically a particular response to those unique concerns. There will be the motivating urges of our unique needs, our unique concerns, our unique interests. And all of that will simply unfold in whatever way the larger mysterious dance of existence expresses it. For all of us, we will have our moments of joy, our moments of ecstasy, and we will have our moments of sorrow, our moments of dread. There's no way to escape this larger mysterious dance of existence, because there is only this larger mysterious dance of existence. The whole notion that we're influencing it is a fantasy. From this non-dual perspective, let me add to this that all of what I'm expressing here is simply for your consideration. It's not asking you to believe this. If you apparently relate to a non-dual perspective, that's wonderful. And if you don't, that's also wonderful. This isn't the one and only way that life is going to express itself. It's not the one and only way that life is going to express apparent human beings. It's not the one right way that life is going to express itself. It's just one of the ways that life expresses itself. There's no way of saying what any of it is, and none of it is anyone's personal doing. Again, from this non-dual sensibility. And who's to say what any of that actually is? I mean, it's, again, this whole apparent presentation of this moment, these storylines that I seem to be presenting, I mean, this situation itself is just a totally unexplainable happening the way it happens. But within the world of apparent form, these storylines that I seem to be presenting to you, you know, as we consider these storylines, it's simply a consideration of the limitation of these storylines, ultimately. And the realization that the storylines are ultimately a fantasy. It doesn't get rid of the apparent fantasy. It's just a realization that it is a fantasy. And so this consideration, in this consideration, it may become obvious that the whole notion that we're influencing life in any way whatsoever is ridiculous, because, again, any of our basic motivating factors, our needs, our interests, our concerns, our urges to resist certain urges, we don't create any of that. It all simply arises. One person has an urge to devote their life to professional basketball, and someone else has an urge to devote his or her life to stamp collecting, and someone else has an urge to devote his or her life to selling real estate. We don't decide what particular urge is going to play out in our apparent life. So ultimately, it's the acknowledgement that the storyline about poor little me being at the center of existence, poor little me being abused by a cold alien world, or wonderful little me accomplishing all kinds of amazing things, it's the acknowledgement that all of that is fantasy. We're not the center of the universe. The universe doesn't actually have any center. We're not the center of this unformed dance of the moment. There isn't any center to the unformed dance. It's an unformed, unexplainable happening. To start to focus on notions of a center or a circumference is again trying to apply form to something that has no particular form. In certain spiritual traditions, they would say that it's not about us. Existence isn't all about us. It's something greater. Something more mysterious, something that can't be explained, something that we're not in charge of. Within a Christian tradition, you have passages in the Bible which point out very clearly that it's all God's doing. That human beings do not direct their own lives. Now, that's not paraphrasing some statement in the Bible. That is a statement in the Bible. It's not some strange interpretation of a statement in the Bible. There are many statements in the Bible to that effect. Man does not direct his own steps. There's even a portion in the Bible where they have a very poetic description of God basically telling someone that what he's going to do, what God is going to do, has nothing to do with anybody's behavior. What he does, what he chooses to do, what God does, what God apparently chooses to do, has nothing to do with anybody's behavior. It's not influenced by anybody's behavior. It's just totally up to his whim. Now, this is a very romantic and poetic way of simply saying that there's this totally mysterious, unexplainable happening or presence that moves in whatever way it's going to move. And so you have, in the book of Ecclesiastes, you have someone who's really explored life and considered all these different facets of life, and ultimately he says, look, eat, drink, do whatever you have to do. It's all going to be over soon. But as far as pursuing some kind of understanding or some kind of constant that is going to be wonderful and golden and glowing, give it up. That doesn't exist. There's a very strong statement within Ecclesiastes which points out that none of it makes any sense. It just happens the way it happens, and ultimately all of it is God's expression. So eat, drink, enjoy what you can, do what you have to do, and don't worry about it. That's the way it's expressed in that particular tradition. It's not necessarily the way that I express it. But in that vein, from this non-dual perspective, we ultimately acknowledge that life is going to move in whatever way it moves. An acknowledgement of this mysterious, unformed, unexplainable happening or presence, the happening of this moment, and everything that we already know, everything that we already see and acknowledge, that is the unexplainable, unformed, happening, simply happening on its own, that it's going to move in whatever way it moves, and it's going to apparently offer each of us certain moments of joy and certain moments of sorrow. It's going to move in its own way, in its own time, and who knows what it's apparently going to offer to each one of us. It's not about us. And this acknowledgement is not going to clear away the moments of agony, the moments of despair. It's simply pointing out that it will be whatever it will be. Doris Day had it in had it pegged totally in her song Que Sera Sera, whatever will be, will be. The future is not ours to see. Que sera, sera. It's not about a human being. There's no way of saying what any of this is about. It's not about a human being finding ultimate control in existence. It's simply a totally mysterious happening, presenting whatever it seems to be presenting, moving and shifting and dancing in its own way, in its own apparent time. And in that, an apparent human being is freed. We don't have to be concerned, ultimately, about how this is going to express itself, because we don't get to influence it. We don't have to be concerned about how it's going to express itself, because all of it is moving to, you know, all of it is the dance of something that can't ever be understood in any way whatsoever, and all of it is spontaneously and naturally expressing itself according to its own nature, whatever that is. It's a dance of bizarre and ever-shifting, sometimes wonderful, sometimes terrible appearances, or sometimes wonderful, sometimes terrible apparent experiences. none of it having any particular form, none of it having any actual rhyme or reason, simply playing out in whatever way it plays out. None of it being a human being that is subject to birth and death, all of it simply being this happening that has no particular form. It's always just happening without any particular form. Whatever seems to be existing now is automatically moving on to something else. And so, once again, each of us gets our own apparent unique adventure. It's like the wildest ride at the wildest theme park. The thrills, the dangers, the excitements, the joys, the laughter, the despair. It's the biggest thrill ride that exists. And the weird thing is that there really isn't anybody on a ride. There's no way of saying what any of this actually is. So, that's enough. I could probably ramble on about disparate points for quite a long time, but even for me, this gets quite boring at times. So that's it, folks. I wish you well in the coming month, but as always, it's going to be a mixed bag of things. I wish you well in your own unique adventure, but you are going to have to endure certain agonies in whatever way you're expressed. So, till next time, take care. See ya.